How President Trump's trade and tariff policies could affect jobs right here on the First Coast. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. And just ahead, hear about what changes we can expect when it comes to our tax policies, trade, tariffs, under a Trump administration. Lots to talk about. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, it's our book club on the show today with the bestseller, What We Become. We'll tell you about it. And did you remember your sweetheart? It's Valentine's Day. Hear about a local program working to keep couples together. All of that and more ahead. But first this hour, President Trump has promised big changes to America's corporate tax structure, along with the nation's trade agreements and tariff policies. It can be a complicated issue, and restructuring these policies could have a big impact right here on the First Coast. The tax reform debate, trade, tariffs, and jobs, it's our focus on the show this morning. To break it all down for us, we're joined by John O'Brien, CEO of Vista Energy Group and professor at Flagler College. John, good to see you.
Good morning, Melissa.
And when it comes to trade, tariffs, and jobs under a Trump White House, we want your calls and questions. This can be pretty dense, complicated stuff, but we're going to try to make it really interesting and entertaining for you. Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaandJax, or weigh in on our Facebook page. And this is a massive subject. There's a lot to get into. But you want to make this tax reform debate understandable. Let's begin with the big picture. What are Donald Trump's major goals when it comes to these policies, and how will they differ from the Obama administration?
Well, I think that his major goal actually is to look at the cadre of people who supported him in the election, which were principally folks that had been disadvantaged by trade, lost their jobs through no fault of their own in the manufacturing sector. And so I believe that what he's looking at is a situation where he'd like to bring back all the manufacturing jobs that were here. And I think my own take on this is that that's not the way to go, because everybody doesn't want to work in a factory. But moreover, there are more direct ways to do it than what's being proposed, which has to do with tariffs, which has to do with tax reform. In fact, I've been very involved with the House Ways and Means Committee on tax reform.
And that's a big priority for Republicans in the House.
That's right.
Tax reform.
But all of this is aimed at jobs. It's not aimed at increasing revenues. It's not aimed at closing the deficit. It's really aimed at jobs, everything that's going on right now.
You don't believe Donald Trump's policies will create more jobs. Why not?
Because the jobs that have been lost are mainly lost to automation. All one has to do is look at a picture of an automobile assembly line from 20 years ago and now, and all you see now is robots and no people. And automation is becoming far more prevalent. And on top of that, the new tax plan is going to make it easier because of tax breaks to automate. So I don't the work may come back, but the jobs will not.
All right. So if we begin from this premise that a lot of jobs are being shed due to automation, President Trump is saying, let's put in place stiffer tariffs to better protect our domestic products. Let's change our trade policies with China and other nations, because this more protectionist stance coming from this White House is certainly playing with segments of the population that feel that they've been downsized and their jobs have been offshored, even though, as you say, more jobs have been automated than offshored. But how can this more protectionist stance, how do you see that affecting the economy overall? And what are the pluses and minuses of changing these policies the way that the president is now doing or trying to do?
There is no doubt that some of the trade agreements could be improved upon greatly. Right now, the only trade agreement we have with China is the World Trade Organization, which is just a loose set of rules. However, the difference in the trade agreements is not going to create jobs again in the United States. It may create some. The other thing I want to emphasize is that free trade benefits over 300 million people in this country. The disadvantaged manufacturing workers who have lost their jobs total probably less than 10 million people. So I guess one of the questions is, do we sort of turn the entire tax structure on its head in order to protect 10 million jobs versus all the economic benefits for 300 million people?
You also want to talk about what's known as the border adjustment tax.
This gets complicated, but I'm going to boil it down to something as simple as I possibly can. Basically, the idea is to go from a global tax. Now, if you have, I'm going to put this in the context of personal tax. You are a consultant. You have a job in London. They pay you. You have them pay your account in the Cayman Islands. That sits there tax-free until you bring the money into the United States. The same thing is true of corporations. So what's happened is they have established subsidiaries overseas, and they're parking money overseas. Well, that doesn't sit well. And also what they're doing is they're moving it, the issue of going to Mexico is not related to this. That's labor costs. That's different. What's going on here is a jurisdiction with a lower tax rate. So you move your operation to the lower tax rate, you keep your money over there. The border adjustment is a tax which taxes imports into the United States and doesn't tax on a corporate level exports. The theory being that it wouldn't matter where you have your company. What matters is where your product is consumed. And under that scenario, the companies would have no incentive to go move offshore.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking trade, tariffs, and tax reform on the show today, the three T's, with John O'Brien of Flagler College and Vista Energy Group. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. So as you look at that in the macro, let's bring it down to Jacksonville and the First Coast with our port and the corporate headquarters we have here. How do you see these policies affecting this region?
Well, on a direct basis, the Port of Jacksonville, as well as the other ports in Florida, Florida being a large international trading hub, are going to suffer under a tariff. If a tariff is put in place, what that means is the government will collect a certain percentage of the wholesale value of whatever comes in. That's going to weaken demand for that product. That's going to slow down on trade. It'll slow down on exports as well. And I think that we will be seeing layoffs in the trade zones generally and trade-related jobs, of which there, in Florida there are many, many, many trade-related jobs.
Well, like, give us an example.
Well, the people who work in the port. If there are less ships coming in and out, there's going to be less labor needed in order to facilitate that. And so, therefore, there will very likely be layoffs at the port because of tariffs.
And you gave testimony to this effect before the House Ways and Means Committee.
That's right.
What was the message you brought to Capitol Hill?
Well, basically what I brought to them was that the tax plan which is being proposed, and there are a lot of things going on inside of it, but the point is it relies, in order to not hurt big retailers like Walmart and also many of the retailers we have here, we have a large service industry, in order to not hurt them, the dollar value in exchange rates has to go up. Now, this is an ethereal concept, without a doubt. It's hard to explain even in a college class. But the real point is it may not happen, in which case all of your prices are going to go up.
All right. Let's go to your calls now for John O'Brien. He is CEO of the Vista Energy Group. He also serves on Florida's Energy Commission, teaches at Flagler College, and we are talking about trade policies and tax reform on the show this morning. We want your calls at 549-2937. Paul is in Orange Park, and hey, Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Love to hear your voice.
Thanks.
Taxes. Yeah, well, I'm moving to Ocala, so I don't get to listen to you down there. Taxes, income tax. I read an extensive article on how the proposed changes in income tax were going to affect different levels of income. And basically, a couple making $84,000 or less would have $1,000 less in taxes. But a couple making $1 million or more would pay $1 million less in taxes. And obviously, Trump's looking out after his people with high incomes and not for anybody else.
Okay. Thanks for that, Paul. Will the Trump White House's policies primarily benefit upper income earners? Because of course, his campaign reached out to middle and lower middle income workers, convincing them that his policies will more directly benefit them.
Well, the argument in favor of that is that rich people pay most of the taxes, period, on an absolute basis. However, there is no doubt that the promises made during the campaign are not being followed through on with regard to the middle-income people. And I think that if you look at the statements being made by the new Treasury Secretary, what you would find is that he is still claiming that the upper-income people will not receive a better tax break than the middle-income people.
Here's a tweet for you. Even if the border-adjusted tax is net zero on jobs, what keeps companies from using complex financial schemes to game the system?
Well, absolutely nothing, as long as we have a Congress that's going to go ahead. I'll give you a perfect example. Oil companies get a subsidy in the tax code of $10 billion a year right now. We only collect about $340 billion in corporate taxes. If you look at that, that seems crazy because the oil companies certainly don't need the benefit. But we do that anyway because Congress basically is an organization that responds to money.
Speaking of which, what about what are known as inversions? These are the deals that allow American companies to relocate their headquarters overseas to lower their tax burden. Many companies have run afoul of this one. They've gotten bad publicity over it. I think even Walgreens had a flap over this. What about that? How do you see that evolving under the Trump administration?
Well, the inversions occur simply because of a lower tax rate in another jurisdiction. Ireland is famous for this. They put everything in Ireland because Ireland has a corporate tax rate, which is almost zero. So you just locate your company over there and keep the money over there and spend it on whatever you want as long as it doesn't come back to the United States. The border adjustment tax would fix that. What would happen then is that it depends on where the product is consumed rather than where it's made. So as long as it's consumed in the U.S., you would pay corporate tax on that.
And when it comes to any incoming White House's first 100 days, there are a lot of big promises. Then the reality of governing, of course, sets in. How much of these economic policies do you actually see really making their way through the process? Of course, President Trump has Congress. He has a Republican House and Senate. That said, the devil's in the details always. This is dense stuff, but let's try to break it down in terms of what you really see making it through the process and becoming actual policy that's markedly different from what we've known in the past.
Well, on the con side, the White House is right now a mess. They don't have a coordinated approach to Congress or internally as well. That will probably get fixed. On the pro side, the Congress, particularly the House Ways and Means Committee, is bent on getting something done on the tax code, as is Speaker Ryan and so on. So I believe something will ultimately happen if the White House can straighten out what it's doing.
All right, let's go to a few more calls for John O'Brien. What are your questions about tax reform in this country under President Trump, trade and tariff policy changes? It's 549-2937. Derek on the north side. Hi, Derek.
Yes, just a moment ago.
Hey, we're having trouble hearing you, Derek.
It's Eric.
Yeah, Eric, speak up, please. Ago. Yeah.
Okay. A moment ago, the speaker indicated that rich will end up paying more taxes as a whole, as opposed to the average man, meaning people making less than $50,000 a year. But the rich people use loopholes to avoid paying taxes. And also, because of the subsidies they get from the government to invest in business acquisitions or advancement, they end up not paying as much taxes, and then we see the benefits as well. So they don't pay more taxes, and everybody that pays their fair share of taxes, the average man, ends up paying more taxes.
Okay. Did you? I don't know if you could hear all that.
Yeah, I got it. Basically, a rich person doesn't work. So a rich person pays a capital gains tax, maximum of 15% on income, where everybody else is paying a personal income tax, which is higher. So the bottom line is that rich people pay less because they pay a different tax than people who work.
549-2937. Dave on the south side. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Melissa, good to hear from you again. Thanks for this topic. I'd like to see what Professor would say about the Times Union today had a great editorial on greenhouse gas pollution and advocated, you know, the conservative approach to that problem by placing a tax on energy produced at, by the producer. And this kind of plays into a broader theme of what tax policies could we put in place to promote local production of not just energy, but food and fiber and so forth, that would stimulate local production of jobs by eliminating the subsidies that the professor mentioned, like the oil subsidy and other subsidies for things that, that basically push manufacturing offshore. And also, what does he think about subsidizing imports by dredging our port, $700 million of taxpayer money to dredge a port that the Chinese are not going to pay for?
Three very good questions there. Thanks for that, Dave. Boy, you know, our listeners are the best. They are the smartest, most engaged, most involved listeners in the world. Okay, what about Dave's point?
Okay, I'm going to try to unpack this. As far as the greenhouse gas proposal that was recently put out by a number of conservative Republicans, it is a carbon tax, and a carbon tax makes a lot of sense as opposed to a cap-and-trade system. Now, for those of you who don't know what that is, I'm not going to get into it with the limited time we have.
But you're putting a price on carbon.
That's right. In other words, if you're going to emit carbon and affect the environment, then there's going to be a price per ton.
As a way to disincentivize carbon producers.
That's correct. It's internalizing an externality is what an economist would say. With regard to subsidizing imports, one has to realize that imports really benefit everybody because those imports that come in only come in because they're cheaper. They're less expensive. If you go to Walmart, what you're buying is imported goods and they're less expensive.
Okay. I hope that answers your question. There were a lot of points Dave made, but let's take a few more calls. It's 549-2937 to join us right now. Tom is on the west side. Hello, Tom. Good morning. Happy Tuesday.
Ah, yes. Good morning and happy Valentine's Day to y'all, too.
Yeah.
What my suggestion is to streamline and reform our Byzantine tax system is require that every legislation regarding taxes have a sunset so that rather than staying on the books forever and complicating things needlessly, outdated things would just pass away and we would have far more relevant regulation that people would have to actually vote on periodically.
Well, we do have a sunset on a number of taxes, but the statutory taxes like the corporate tax or the personal income tax are not sunsetted. So as a result, it takes an act of Congress to go forward. It is a good suggestion. The problem is that the flavor of the day, every time there's a sunset, is going to come into play. And whatever it is that right then and there is important is going to be done. And the problem with the sunset also is that it only lasts a certain period of time, but it can be a long period of time.
Here's an email for you from Ricardo. The example given by your guest to equate corporate taxes with individual taxes is flawed. If you're a U.S. person doing consulting abroad, you still have to declare all income, regardless of where you earn it. Second, he says, this idea that corporations park money overseas should be better explained. They don't pay taxes on that money, but that doesn't mean they keep the money stashed away. They can still borrow from themselves and use it.
Well, actually, you're right. You're called income stripping, and you're absolutely correct about that. What happens is the foreign company loans to the domestic company. Now, they're the same company. They're subsidiaries and affiliates. They loan to the domestic company, and then the interest that's charged reduces the income of the domestic company, thereby eliminating its need to pay corporate taxes in the U.S.
Cynics might call that a shell game.
I think that that's an accurate description in many respects.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Bill in Mandarin. Hi, Bill. Good morning to you.
Just real quickly, I'm from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and we had a booming middle class and good prosperity. We all seem to have a much higher tax bracket. What's caused a disconnect with the lower tax bracket and our problems today?
Well, first of all, I'm from that bracket too, by the way. I mean the age bracket, so I understand exactly what you're saying. In fact, what's gone on is government spending has gone up, and the tax brackets really aren't that much higher. Income is higher, and they haven't changed the tax brackets so that where you were making less money on a general basis because inflation hadn't kicked in. You were in a lower tax bracket. As inflation has gone forward and incomes have gone up, the higher tax brackets have kicked in.
Really? But what about the idea that, you know, in the Eisenhower years, for example, the highest income earners in this country, they were being taxed at something like
70%. 70%, yes.
You know, when Ronald Reagan became president, one of the big initiatives he pushed through was to lower those tax rates on higher earners. I mean, you really think that we're still where we were, say, in the Eisenhower years or the Kennedy years in terms of what upper income folks are, how they're being taxed?
No, the top tax rate back then before Reagan was set about 70%, a little less than that, but 70%, which was very high. And during the Reagan years, they lowered it substantially down into the 20s. But since then, It has been raised up to a certain extent.
And it sounded as though from Bill's call, I think the point he was making was that it was actually better for the country overall when that cohort of Americans was being taxed at that really high level. That seemed to be his point.
Well,
and people can agree or disagree on that, of course.
There were a lot of things that were better then. I think that there is a confluence of events, including taxes, but there are other things as well. When we came out of World War II, for instance, the huge level of optimism and happiness that happened led to the biggest boom that ever happened in our country.
Let's go to Steve in Jack's Beach. Hey, Steve. Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
All right, thanks.
I was amazed during the election that automation was never really mentioned as a factor. It was all about jobs being moved overseas or protecting jobs here at home. And of course, automation has been predicted to be replacing most of the manufacturing jobs and now the service industry. How do you think the economy will deal with the labor force as automation increases? What do people make and how do they make it in this country?
Thank you, Steve. I have to say it again. What incredible questions from our listeners today. Go ahead, John.
Well, I think that, first of all, automation is increasing, and it is in the services industry. I mean, if you look at different services that are doing legal work now, LegalZoom, for instance. Now, how do you fix that? Well, the way you fix it is there are other jobs that come out of that, and an axiom that may be true, and I believe it is, although there's some counter-argument, is that new technologies invent new jobs. And so where are those new jobs? Now, the program I have proposed, which we went over on January 4th here on this program, is one where we would take people who are no longer in possession of the skills they need to fill those new jobs and train them to do that.
And as you look down the road 10, 20, 30 years, some of the most dire predictions around automation paint this dystopian hellscape where many millions of people are going to be thrown out of work without adequate training to do the jobs that will be available. Some countries are tinkering with this idea of universal basic income because they see that as the only solution to prevent widespread poverty and just an outbreak of social ills. Do you think that that is a proposal that we will be hearing more about or not?
Yes, I think that universal basic income is going to be what happens. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But what I want to comment on this is the dark vision that people have, that people won't work if they don't have to. The fact is there's a wealth of social scientific evidence that shows scientifically that people want to work and they will do things either way. And so if you had a basic income, you may not go out and do something that is advancing the economy, for instance, but it might advance social welfare, social development, things of that nature. So we are going to go there. There's no doubt about that.
You think that's a certainty?
Yes.
In this country where there will be vociferous, like just massive political opposition to that idea.
That opposition goes away when people, a large number of people, no longer can have jobs because there are no jobs there.
That's really a very interesting prospect and a scary one, I have to say.
I think it's the other way around.
You think it's a positive thing?
Yes, I do, because technology is going to make everything less expensive, and who's going to benefit by that? And that is the question that we have to answer.
I hope you'll come back soon, because it's always fascinating to speak with you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
He's a Professor John O'Brien with Flagler College and Vista Energy Group, also Florida's Energy Commission. Much more still ahead later, a look at the political power of Jacksonville's African-American women. But up next, it's our book club today, as Stacey Goldring opens up the novel What We Become.
You're moving to the rock and sound.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Mayo Clinic, where medical experts work together across specialties to improve diagnosis and treatment for patients with the most complex conditions. More at mayoclinic.org.
Jobs.jacksonville.com is focused on helping employers in Northeast Florida find applicants for open positions. On the web, applicants can do a search, view listings, and apply for jobs. Jobs.jacksonville.com is bringing local employers and candidates together.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Talking about infrastructure spending might sound boring until something breaks. A lot of our roads, bridges, walls, water pipes, and dams are old and underfunded. They need fixing, and fast. Why has our emergency infrastructure gotten so out of shape, and what's it going to cost to fix it? That's next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Independent music transcends genre, form, and age. At Indie Endeavor, we endeavor to shine a light in the little explored dark corners of your musical imagination. Everything from new to old, foreign to domestic, electronic to acoustic, we play it all. Indie Endeavor, Tuesdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, in the novel What We Become, best-selling author Arturo Perez Reverte delivers an epic tale following the dangerous and passionate love affair between a beautiful high society woman and an elegant thief. A story of romance, adventure, and espionage, this novel solidifies Perez Reverte as an international literary giant. It's our book club today on the show as Stacey Goldring takes us into the pages of What We Become, our book club selection for the month. Good morning.
Good morning.
And, you know, we're getting an incredible amount of interest in the book club. Emails all the time. You're such a star. I can't get over it.
You crack me up,
sister. The Jacksonville Public Library is partnering with us on your book club and recommending these titles. So if people want to pick up What We Become, which is your recommendation for the month, they need to go to the library and check it out. So why did you choose What We Become?
Well, you know, this is what's beautiful about a book club, Melissa, is I never would have read this book if it weren't for book club. And this is what I heard from so many people who did read the book. This is a book by an author who never heard of him, but evidently very popular in Spain. And it's a book that, depending on who you are, you're going to see very different themes in this book. It talks about trust, class, politics, love. You are transported to Nice in the late 1830s, Sorrento during the Cold War. Chess is involved. Remember last month I brought the chess set? They had chess in the book. I couldn't believe it 2 months in a row. They talk about the tango and the beauty of the tango and what it represents. There's deception. Ultimately, this is a book that has been translated. And I want to talk to you a minute about translations. Remember that Bill Murray movie, Lost in Translation?
Of course.
Okay, well, that when you read a book and it is translated, you have to wonder, am I really reading what the author intended? You know, is this really the book, or am I getting some, is the word simulacrum, a facsimile?
Right.
You know, yeah. Is it just the doppelganger? I don't know. So this is this like conundrum that I deal with, and I want to explore this sometime, another time, devote a program
sure.
to that. But I find it very fascinating because the book in Spanish is not called What We Become. The book in Spanish is called Tango of the Old Guard. So if you
that sounds nothing like What We Become.
I know. So you know it. You know they say you can't judge a book by its cover, or don't judge someone by how they dress, etc. But you can't help but think you're influenced. You're influenced. So for some reason, the American book is titled differently than it was in Spain. So you know, there you have it. And the author even says, loosely translated, because everything I researched about him had to be translated through that Google Translate, so it's kind of, you know, clunky.
Yeah.
But he says it's very difficult for him to read his translations. And he's written prolifically, so the library should have lots of stuff
it's
on
like,
him, but it's so
yeah,
hard.
It's like maybe looking at a beautiful painting through a cheesecloth or something. Like,
well,
you can't
done.
Quite
yeah,
get
yeah.
the full
Yeah, you're
picture.
Like, I can't really focus. You know, I need my prescription adjusted.
Get those readers out, which I depend on increasingly throughout
yeah,
my life.
Ain't it the truth.
But, and, okay, so, but as you read this, this is one that you recommend, and I always trust your recommendations mm-hmm. because of the storytelling.
The story is about a man who has to look back on his life. And so we go back and forth in time, and here is a man who's kind of like a vividor, kind of a ladies man, and he uses the tango and his suave ways to elevate himself out of the barrios in Buenos Aires, and he works by his own wits to become you know, in high society. And so we follow him on his heists and different things that he gets involved in. We visit the Cold War, we visit the Spanish Civil War, so we learn a lot of history, and we're right there with all the fancy people during the 1930s when the tango was very popular. You learn about what the tango means, and you know, it's this dance. And isn't chess also a dance? You know, a back and forth, it's strategy. And the same thing with the Cold War. You're doing what? I'm doing what? You know, we keep our cards close to the vest. So there's a lot of metaphors happening, and a lot of things in this book happen in threes. And we know in literature, we know biblically speaking, we know in math, we know in interior design, three is an important number. And this is why the book works so well. It's built so strongly. Our author, he was a war correspondent for over 21 years. You know, kind of like, you know, Tolstoy, he was also a war correspondent. They don't write the same, but they both are scarred from their war experiences. So this author, he has a very pessimistic view about people. However, he finds solace. He finds solace in reading. And do you mind if I read you a quote of his? Is that okay?
Sure.
I know it's clunky, but I will keep it very brief. He says, "We are ceasing to be educated to use history as a teacher, find the answers in Socrates. We don't know how to comfort ourselves or look for ways to escape because we've erased history from our scope of understanding. Only in times of consolation and misfortune can you find solace in a book."
And that sums up our fabulous book club.
I know.
Email Stacy at bookclub@wjct.org. Be part of her physical book club every mm-hmm. month at the San Marco Bookstore, where you can meet her and check out What We Become at the Jacksonville Public Library. They are our partner in the First Coast Connect Book Club. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air.
If any white man in the world says, "Give me liberty or give me death," the entire white world applauds. When a black man says exactly the same thing, he is judged a criminal.
We'll talk about the new James Baldwin documentary, I Am Not Your Negro, with its director, Raoul Peck. And we'll hear an excerpt of my 1986 interview with Baldwin. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On WJCT's radio reading service at 8 a.m. weekday mornings, it's 3 hours of news, op-eds, and obituaries from your local newspaper. Here's a call we received from someone who listens online.
I'm very happy to tell you that my daughter found the app for the radio reading service on my tablet, and I'm using that, and it's excellent. I enjoy all the programs.
If you're living with blindness and want to hear what's in the paper, go to wjct.org/radio reading, underwritten by Florida Eye Specialists.
For everyone creating their own life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. Sponsored in part by AARP Real Possibilities.
Welcome back. Well, you may not know that Jacksonville has a rich history of electing African-American women into political office. In fact, the first women ever elected to the Jacksonville City Council were African American. As the city's demographics become more diverse, what lessons can we learn to encourage more women of color to get involved in politics? That's the topic of a new salon, a TEDx salon, coming up Thursday night at FSCJ. It's called Lift as We Climb, Women of Color and Political Involvement in Jacksonville. Mary Rose is Director of Service Learning and Civic Engagement at FSCJ. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Imani Hope. She's Director of Strategic Investment at Jacksonville Public Education Fund.
Good morning.
Good to see you. Mary, let's begin with you. Speaking at this event, you've got everyone from former Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll, former State Rep Mia Jones, State Senator Audrey Gibson, and more. This is all about the history of African-American women in Jacksonville politics and trying to get more of them involved.
Absolutely. That's one of the biggest strengths that Jacksonville has, I think, is this legacy of African-American women involved in politics. And so we want to build on that strength and encourage other women of color in Jacksonville to run for office.
Imani, how is the Jacksonville Public Education Fund playing a part in all of this?
We actually have a couple of our staff members who have been involved in the sort of planning of this really amazing event. Dr. Rose shares a space with us at the DuPont Center and invited us to take part. So we've just been lending our just some of our thoughts and brainstorming with her, and I think it's going to be an amazing event.
This is certainly going to be fascinating because the women who've successfully run for office have had to overcome some pretty difficult barriers, and it's not as though those barriers have gone away in 2017.
No, and I'm hoping that this event will help demystify the process of running for office. I think there's a lot of intricacies and a lot of information that's kind of passed down through social networks, and so this is an opportunity for us to help open up that process for more women.
Because the data shows a lot of women that want to run or might think about running, they just don't because they think it's too difficult, it would right. take too much of a toll on me and my family's private lives. Mm-hmm. Right. It's hard. You have to really push women to run, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think so. And I think it's also just this sort of just a fear of, can I do it? Will I get support? What are the steps? And I think that part of what we've tried to create with this event is really, what are the in-between steps that lead to running for political office?
You really want to lay out a blueprint for women that are considering this.
Yes. And also, I think we want to look at the nuances and complexities of being a woman of color and running for office and what that means. Because I think that there's a lot of details and intersectionalities there that people aren't aware of. And so we're hoping that both women of color who are interested in running for office, as well as others who are interested in including women of color, will come to this event.
This is a free event. This is coming up Thursday night. Lift as We Climb, Women of Color and Political Involvement in Jacksonville. How can people be part of this?
They can register on Eventbrite. The link is liftaswe climb.eventbrite.com. And it's free, and we hope that people come out.
And this is at FSCJ which campus?
The downtown campus.
The downtown campus. Lift as We Climb, Women of Color and Political Involvement in Jacksonville, Thursday night at the downtown FSCJ campus. Come on out to this. And thank you, Mary Rose, with FSCJ, Imani Hope, with JPEF. Thanks for sharing this with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
In a moment, it is Valentine's Day. We'll tell you what one pair of counselors is doing to keep couples together.
I'm Catherine Burns, one of the hosts of the Moth Radio Hour, and I hope you'll join us here on 89.9 WJCT. With true personal stories told live without notes to standing room crowds around the world, Moth stories aren't part of the disposable daily information flow. They stick with you, and you'll even find yourself retelling them. Listen Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on 89.9 WJCT.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
Classical music is available 22 hours a day on WJCT 89.9 FM HD2. Find out how you can listen to classical music by calling 358-6390. Enjoy classical music day or night on 89.9 HD2.
Welcome back and happy Valentine's Day. Hope you're going to celebrate it with someone you love. Because we've all heard the sobering statistic, nearly half of all marriages end in divorce. Here in Duval County, the sad reality is hundreds of couples will file during this romantic month of February. But a new program, Live the Life, is working to keep marriages together here in Northeast Florida. Live the Life Chairman Dennis Stoika joins us now to tell us more about it. Good morning.
Good morning.
Along with Jerry and Susan Pittman, a Jacksonville couple that have gone through the program. Hey, Pittmans.
Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
And we'll hear from Jerry and Susan in a minute. But first, Dennis, how does Live the Life work? Because you're saying that you've really had an impact in reducing the divorce rate by couples that have gone through the program.
Yeah, amazingly so. About 18 months ago, a group of philanthropists decided to try an experiment of what would it be like if we invested at the rate of a dollar per person in a county per year, what would be the impact of a divorce? A year into the experiment, the results are in. The divorce rate in Duval County is down by 1/6 in 2016 compared to 2015.
And you think Live the Life had something to do with that?
What we think is a cultural shift has occurred. We've been working with churches and faith-based organizations throughout Jacksonville to make marriage education programs readily available throughout the community. And we've built a community marriage resource center website at livethelife.org where people can find access to programs that can help them build strong and healthy marriages.
And when you say Live the Life, what does that mean?
So Live the Life is the name of a local nonprofit. We're actually a statewide organization with offices in four locations, including here in Jacksonville. We opened our Jacksonville office in 2013, and since then, divorces have fallen by 24% over the last several years.
All right, Jerry and Susan Pittman, you've gone through this Live the Life program.
Yes,
why
ma'am.
Did you come to it to begin with? Were you having trouble in your marriage and decided you needed the help?
Well, I would say that we were in deep, deep distress. 27 years of lies, adultery, tension, destruction, and the timing was that we had to do something.
You knew you had to do something or split up.
Right.
So how did this program help you, Susan?
It helped us to redefine what marriage was and learn. We learned specific tools to bring in trust, intimacy, passion to our marriage, and it's completely changed our marriage.
Really? So you have a completely different relationship today?
Yes. We would say, we actually say we have a new marriage.
Really? What are some of the tools that you've learned in the course of doing this?
Well, one of the most effective tools we learned was called a daily temperature reading, and basically it's an exercise that builds emotional intimacy. which is basically a starting point for connection.
And Dennis, the loss of that emotional connection, isn't that usually what leads to estrangement between couples?
It is, but the good news is that passion that couples had when they first dated and got engaged can be reinvigorated and started again. And that's what we teach in our classes. What I want to point out is these classes are not just for distressed couples. We have classes for youth, for engaged couples. We actually coach most couples to go through marriage education, 8 hours of marriage education, each and every year of their married life together, just as you do a tune-up, or you go to a dentist once a year. It's all preventative to keep your relationship healthy, happy, and in love like it is today on Valentine's Day.
So how will you be celebrating Valentine's Day, Pittman's?
Well, my sweet husband left me a beautiful Valentine's card on my dashboard this morning, and he's informed me that he's made reservations for somewhere very special for dinner.
Very nice.
A little romantic Italian.
Oh, sounds good. Mm-hmm. Just sounds perfect for Valentine's Day.
I think they even have a violinist.
Aw, that's really sweet. Well, I appreciate you sharing your story with our listeners. I know that can probably be a little scary to think about, and it's exciting to see that it's worked so well for you. And how can people learn more about Live the Life?
Really visit our website at livethelife.org. From there, you can click on a place to find classes locally here in Jacksonville. When they do, you'll find there's over 50 different classes scheduled in the upcoming months in the Jacksonville area. So there's lots of help, lots of hope for your marriage.
It's Live the Life. Thanks so much, Chairman Dennis Stoica, and graduates of the program, Jerry and Susan Pittman, and happy Valentine's Day to y'all.
To you, too.
Thank you
so much. And finally, this hour, on this Valentine's Day, maybe if you're enjoying some chocolate and flowers, well, guess what? Electro Lounge host David Ludkin has another little treat for you. It's a preview of his show tonight, a tribute to Thievery Corporation.
Brand new Thievery Corporation album came out just 2 days ago. And if you know them, then you know the influence and constant source of creativity Jamaican music has been. And their new release, The Temple of I and I, just shows how much that influence is. Their unique style of down-tempo, trip-hop, reggae, and dub all come together for a very satisfying new album. And you can hear the whole thing tonight at 9. We've got a little bit of it now for you. This is called Love Has No Heart. Keep waiting for Shanna to start singing, but she sings a little bit late. I should have had that cued better.
Yes, that's a long wind-up.
Shanna Halligan is
the singer. Why don't we let Michelle keep playing it, and we'll just close with it.
Sure.
We'll keep talking over the music a little bit. You love this band.
Oh, I love them. They're probably the premier world band of, like I say, trip-hop, down-tempo, reggae. Been around for well over, I guess, 15, 20 years now.
And you love Jamaican music, so you really want to devote a whole show.
Valentine's Day, I honeymooned in Jamaica.
Oh, very nice.
So yeah, I've loved Bob Marley and all that great music forever. And these guys, although I don't know where Shayna is, I must have got the instrumental version. They've been mixing it up with world style music for, like I said, I think the first album was like 98. So they've been.
What is it
about
Jamaica that produces such incredible music?
Well,
what are the cultural factors besides Bob Marley?
Well, what Marley and the guys back in the 60s said was they listened to Miami radio.
Uh-huh.
So their influence was Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions and all that soul music, and they mixed it with ska and original Jamaican music, and you come up with reggae, rock steady, lovers rock, all that nice chill out music that only the Jamaicans can do. People like Gregory Isaacs and Dennis Brown, and just great music.
All right.
Happy
we're
going
to close with a little more of it. I think she found another cut for you.
Oh, okay.
Because she's Michelle Corum.
She's
amazing.
The best.
And so we're going to close with a little bit more of Thievery Corporation. Their new album is out this week. David is devoting a whole hour tonight.
Actually, I added another hour. The second hour will be classic thievery. So the first hour, the brand new album. The second hour, all the favorites you love, like Lebanese Blonde and all the great stuff.
It's a special two-hour block of Thievery Corporation, courtesy of our own Electro Lounge host and music director, David Luckin, tonight at 9 on the Electro Lounge. And we're going to close with a little more for your Valentine's Day listening pleasure. Always good to see you. Thanks for coming by. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the show. And our theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. Next on 1A, President Trump wants to spend $1 trillion fixing what's broken and in need of repair. Who pays for that and what would it be spent on? That's coming up. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9. Have a great day.
Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.